I'm Mike Dowdy, and this is the School Leadership Show. In this episode, I sit down with author Doug Stone, who is the author of the book Thanks for the Feedback, along with Sheila Heen. And joining us is Jen David Lang, who writes The Main Idea. And she actually summarized Doug's book in one of her recent editions of The Main Idea. And the three of us talk about everything related to feedback, why we're good at it, why we're bad at it, the different types of feedback, how to get better at giving and receiving feedback. It's a great conversation, and I learned a ton from both of them. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the School Leadership Show with Doug Stone and Jen David Lang. And at the end, don't forget to go to iTunes and rate the podcast and leave a review. So enjoy the episode. I'm here with Doug Stone and Jen David Lang. This is my first three-way interview here, so thank you both for joining me today.
You're welcome.
It's nice to be here.
And I just wanted you to tell folks a little bit about yourselves before we get into our discussion about feedback today. Now, Jen, you're kind of a regular now on the podcast.
I guess so.
So two appearances makes you a regular. So ladies first, if you want to remind folks about you and your work.
I've been in education for about 25 years. I've done everything from teaching to leadership. And about 7 years ago, I came to the realization that school leaders didn't have enough time for their own professional learning. So I started The Main Idea. The Main Idea is a service for busy school leaders, and each month I summarize a compelling new book in the field, and I email that summary to thousands of school leaders all over the world. And that's how I came across Doug Stone and Sheila Heen's excellent book, Thanks for the Feedback, which has been quite popular among my subscribers. The reason I chose this book is because all over the U.S., schools are using new forms of teacher evaluation that involve feedback. And leaders feel like they're still not seeing the type of improvement in teaching and learning that they'd like to see. And Thanks for the Feedback is tremendously useful for those school leaders who are genuinely trying to give more effective feedback, that perhaps they are not considering one key aspect of feedback, which is that the receiver is the key person in whether anyone does anything about the feedback. So this book is incredibly insightful in putting the focus on the receiver and helping school leaders understand that.
All right. And Doug, your background isn't necessarily completely education. So you want to tell folks a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I was actually a lawyer for a little while. But now I teach negotiation and communication skills at Harvard Law School. And I also do writing and consulting. And in my consulting practice, we consult to just sort of everybody, from governments and businesses to schools and communities and families. So I've done some work with schools, high schools, universities, et cetera. But I sort of span a whole range of areas.
And this isn't your first book, right? The feedback book.
This is not. So in 1999, I wrote a book called Difficult Conversations, How to Discuss What Matters Most. And that book was really about just how to talk about things that are hard to talk about. And in fact, in some ways, the feedback book grew out of that book because my co-authors and I would go around and talk with people and give presentations. And we'd ask people what their toughest, difficult conversations are. And inevitably, regardless of whatever else was on that list, giving and receiving feedback was always one of the conversations that people found most difficult.
So it kind of grew out of that first book about difficult conversations then.
Yeah, it's a sort of deep dive on a specific topic, which is, as Jen said, the book focuses on receiving feedback, although it's also about giving feedback. But the insight that we had was that no matter how good someone is at giving feedback, no matter how good the feedback is that you get, it really comes down to you, the receiver, to figure out what the feedback means and how to make something useful out of it.
So, and that's exactly where I was headed next. So when after this topic, you know, everybody thinks they know what feedback is and how to give it, but you know, what really surprised you the most during your research and the process of writing this book?
Just that everyone struggles with it in some way. Even, you know, there are, I think some people struggle more and some people struggle less. I would put myself in the struggle more category, by the way. Mm-hmm. And in some ways that made me, you know, a good person to be investigating this topic. But I think everyone struggles to some degree with feedback. And it's just so central to our lives. We're not defining it just as the formal feedback that you get at work or the, you know, the year-end annual review. But in addition, obviously it is those things, but in addition to those things, it's really the question of how do you learn from your own life? How do you learn about yourself from other people? And how do you get better at things?
All right, so how do you?
it can't be done. That's the negative.
Okay.
Well, it's hard, but from the, I think one of the most important things to think about in the schools is that there are really three different kinds of feedback. And one kind is sort of the common one, which is evaluation. So evaluation is the thing that says, this is where you stand, you know, you're a 4 out of 5, or you're good at this, but not good at this. And we need evaluation because that gives us a sense of what's going on and how we compare to others and whether we're meeting our goals, etc. But in addition to evaluation, a second kind of feedback is coaching. And this is really the way that we do get better in our lives. So coaching, the purpose of coaching is just to say, here are things you could do differently. Here's what you're doing now, and here's how you could improve. So it's specific ideas for how to improve. And then a third kind of feedback is appreciation. So in addition to evaluation and coaching, human beings want to feel seen. We want to feel like people understand us. We want to feel like people appreciate the hard work that we're putting in. And I think very often in a busy work setting, and we know how busy people are in the school systems, where it's just, you know, there's just more and more work to do every year, the appreciation element can easily drop out because people are thinking, you know, I've got to do this formal evaluation, then I've got to do this project and this and this, and we're just sort of overwhelmed with the amount of work to do. And it's hard to sort of take the time to, especially as a supervisor or a principal or an administrator, to take the time to just remember that people thrive when they feel appreciated for what they're doing well, regardless of where they need improvement. People need to hear that that other people appreciate the work that they're doing.
So, Jen, I kind of want you to weigh in on this because you've done quite a bit of work on feedback in the educational setting or realm. You know, based on Doug's work, and Doug, feel free to jump in. You know, what do you think are the biggest mistakes that new and you know, seasoned administrators, and they could be administrators in all fields, make in terms of giving feedback?
That's a good question. Before I go into the mistakes, I just want to cite a very important piece of research. John Hattie has done an exhaustive analysis of over 50,000 studies that show which school factors have the highest impact on student achievement, and giving formative feedback to teachers, that's the coaching that Doug's talking about, has an effect size of 0.90, which is huge. This is really one of the top influences on achievement. So if schools can get feedback to teachers right, there's tremendous potential for improvement. However, you ask, what are the most common mistakes? I've done a lot of thinking about this, and the first one is absolutely what Doug said, is not being aware as a school leader that teachers need the appreciation, the coaching, and the evaluation, all three. That's certainly one. The second one is that school leaders don't work hard enough on developing the relationships before giving the feedback. And this comes into play with the relationship triggers that Doug talks about in his book. If a teacher's feeling she can't hear this feedback from you, the principal, then the feedback is useless. So first, principals need to develop the relationship, the trust, the credibility before the feedback can have any impact. The third area is that we often give feedback that is too vague. As Dan and Chip Heath said in their book, Switch, what often looks like resistance is often a lack of clarity. So teachers, it's not that they're not doing what you said, but you often aren't very clear. What is the one specific thing you observed, and what is one thing that they can do to change? So we need to get more specific with our feedback. The fourth area is that we don't always provide teachers with very clear criteria. So if I'm a teacher, are you coming into my classroom to see if the caps on my markers are off, or to see if my students are deeply engaged in critical thinking? So we have to be clear, what is the criteria we're using when we are coming in and observing teachers? And the fifth mistake that I see is school leaders not following up on feedback. If you just give feedback and leave it to chance, whether any of it's implemented, then you're doing exactly that. You're leaving it to chance. So after giving the feedback, go into the classroom, have another conversation, and see what is being implemented. So those are five of the main mistakes I see administrators making when it comes to feedback.
What do you think, Doug?
That was spectacular in my view. Those certainly resonate with me in terms of both work that I've done in schools, but just in organizations generally. And I want to hit on, just go a little further on Jen's point number three about being specific. This is just a chronic problem with feedback where we all do it. We give each other feedback and we think we're being specific. We know what we mean when we give somebody feedback. We have a specific image in our minds, but the other person may not know. So for example, if I want to give a teacher feedback on their class management skills and I say, look, you've got to be stricter with class management. In my mind, there's 20 years of experience that I've had doing this, and I know what I mean by the word stricter, and I know what I mean by the phrase class management. And the teacher may have a different image of what that means or when it applies. And so the more specific you can be, the better feedback in that arena would be really sitting the person down and saying, here are three things you can do at the very beginning. Here's what I observed that raised questions for me. Here are the things that I saw the students doing. Here are the ways that you responded. What was your sense of that when you were doing it? Here was my sense of it. Here are a couple things that I think you can try. So you're getting totally on the same page first, and you're also open to hearing that the teacher may see things differently. And so the feedback giver might realize that, well, actually in that context, given what the teacher was trying to do with that particular student, it did make sense because as an observer and a coach, maybe I didn't have full information. But the bigger point is just to really get on the same page with the teacher. What are you seeing? What am I seeing? How are you interpreting that? How am I interpreting that? And then here's some very specific things that you can try. And at that point, you've really given the teacher every advantage to be able to take advantage of the feedback.
Well, and it's interesting, as I listen to both of you talk about, not only the importance of the relationship, but this idea that there's a giver and a receiver of the feedback. So what can leaders do to, I get building the relationship, that's kind of an amorphous idea, which we can dig a little bit into, but beyond building the relationship, how can the feedback givers help the receivers be better at receiving?
I have some thoughts on this, so and Jen probably does as well.
Sure.
That would explain the laughter, is that why?
I suspect. I think the number one thing that a feedback giver can do to promote feedback, good feedback receiving skills in others, is to be a good feedback receiver themselves. So let me try to unpack that a little bit. So if I'm a principal and I have to give teachers and my colleagues and administrators feedback periodically, it's very easy to fall into this idea that, well, I'm the principal. I'm the one that gives feedback, right? But the better I am at soliciting and engaging with feedback myself, the better off we're all going to be. Because now I'm not just telling people feedback matters, I'm modeling how to do it, and I'm walking the talk. And so if I can make it clear to my colleagues and to teachers, look, I'm open to talking about feedback. In fact, I expect it. I appreciate it. I might not take all the feedback that I get, and I know that you might not take all the feedback that you get, but you'll see me engaging with it and having real conversations about it. And when the feedback makes sense to me, you'll also see me striving to try to take that feedback. And that sends as important a message as anything else that you can do, I think.
Well, and I think along those lines too, providing some modeling a structure for gathering and getting feedback from folks. I know I give a lot of presentations, and I will always tell people up front, hey, listen, you know, I'm a big boy, I have thick skin, there's a chance I'm going to have to give this presentation again. I'm going to ask you for, at the very end, some very specific feedback related to whatever it is, the content, the slides, the activities, whatever, you know, to make it as specific as possible and to put it out there up front. Listen, you're not helping me if you just tell me I did a good job.
Exactly. And they're not really helping you if they tell you that you did a bad job. In other words, they need to be more specific. They need, as you said, they need to say, here's what I was concerned about with the slides. You know, there weren't enough photographs.
And I think that why it's particularly important as the leader of a school instead of the leader of a company that makes widgets to model receiving feedback well is that we are running learning organizations. And everything in Doug's book and everything you hear about feedback is not just about the principal giving feedback to the teachers, but then it's also teachers giving feedback to students. It all applies. So from the very top of the learning organization, we need to model receiving feedback well and using it to learn and to improve. And I don't know if I'm allowed to quote Doug while he's right here, but I really love the line in his book where he and Heen write, "Nothing affects the learning culture of an organization more than the skill with which its executive team receives feedback." And that shows absolutely why modeling feedback is so important.
Let's unpack that a little bit. Doug, you want to go deeper on that?
Sure. You know, I think there's a few reasons why being good at receiving feedback, if you're the principal or superintendent, is so important. One is it models it, as Jen is saying, better than just merely telling people that feedback is important. You're showing them that it's so important that you prioritize it. You're also showing them that you're not perfect, right? That you do things and then people show you how to do things better. And even though you might be the head person in the school, you're still learning. As Jen observes, it's a learning. You're setting up the learning culture in a powerful way. And then a third thing is that you, as the principal or superintendent or member of the Board of Ed, you actually are just getting better because you're getting this feedback. So you're getting better at what you do, which is a good thing on its own. So there's many reasons why being modeling and really working hard to almost exaggeratedly model receiving feedback well is so important.
And can I suggest a very painful way to model that feedback that would that would be helpful? I know this might be hard to do, but if as a school leader you would consider videotaping yourself giving feedback to a teacher and then sharing that video with other leaders at your school or other colleagues outside of school and asking people for feedback on your giving of feedback, that would be okay. Not just to model it, but then to get some concrete suggestions from people. You know, oh, you rushed right into giving a suggestion without providing any appreciation. You had 14 suggestions when that's too many to follow. You know, open yourself up to those kinds of comments from other leaders, and even make that a regular practice of your school leadership team meeting would be to share videos of each other giving feedback to teachers.
Yeah, that is unbelievably powerful. I've had experience with that, and watching yourself on camera do it in a mediocre way and then get feedback is beyond powerful. Is now okay. So in addition to perhaps videotaping, I kind of look at that as one end of the spectrum of, yeah, you know, we're really going after it there. What are some other ways that administrators might improve their skills and knowledge related to giving feedback and receiving it, for that matter, beyond reading Doug and Sheila's book? Because we'll start there.
Start by reading the book. Absolutely. I think there's one suggestion that has the potential to really make a large impact on feedback giving at your school. And that is to calendar regular feedback meetings with teachers. So if you take your whole leadership team and you divide up the teaching staff and figure out, can you schedule a half hour meeting with each teacher every other week, every 3 weeks, whatever you can do. But by calendaring regular feedback meetings, you're ensuring that you are at least giving regular feedback. Whether it's high quality or not, that's another issue. But you're at least ensuring that those meetings happen. And Paul Bambrick Santoyo, in his book Leverage Leadership, he writes, from receiving weekly observations and feedback, a teacher develops as much in 1 year as most teachers do in 20. So you would be accelerating the feedback by having these regular weekly meetings.
Wow.
Another thing that you can do is, and I think that one is fantastic, and that's a great statistic. Another thing you can do is to promote a learning culture explicitly, where I think we often think, well, we have, you know, we're a school, of course we have a learning culture. But what does that really mean? And one way to do that in a very concrete way to promote a learning culture is for the people, the leaders at the school, to tell their own stories of having improved at something. There's sometimes this idea as leaders or as very successful teachers where we want to be perceived as just sort of naturals. You know, well, this, of course, they're a good teacher because they were born a good teacher. And, you know, it's understandable that we want to be seen that way, but it's rarely the case that success comes that way. Much more often, for most of us, it's, you know, we have some natural ability and we're doing some things well, we're doing some things less well. And we all have those, the people that get really good are the ones who say, well, you know, how can I work on this? What could I do differently? I had this assumption and I changed it because I got feedback and then I actually got better. And so rather than seeing that as a weakness, to promote that into the culture where it's almost like a game where we're saying, you know, in 5 years, we want each teacher to have 7 stories of things that they were doing that they thought were really great, which turned out to be not great, which they, you know, they got feedback on, they learned from, and we those aren't the exception, and those aren't the problem people. Those are the people who are really doing things well, the ones who are really learning from their mistakes and from what other people are telling them.
Well, and I feel like when, you know, it's clear that feedback works, you know, I sort of feel like in education and in kind of all disciplines related to leadership, as things converge and we start to hear more about the same types of issues or things that work in different areas, like I think of, you know, Jeff Colvin's work in Talent is Overrated, the whole idea of deliberate practice and a knowledgeable coach. I mean, that feedback is embedded into that.
Yeah, and that, you know, that raises a related point, which just sort of circles back to something I was saying earlier, which is that these all have to be two-way conversations, and I think it's really hard for feedback givers to remember that, and particularly in schools where we're used to being teachers or administrators, to remember that the person giving the feedback is a learner also, and the person giving the feedback might modify their feedback based on the what the feedback receiver says they're working on or their theory of why they're doing what they're doing, the more those are conversations rather than just delivering the news, delivering the messages, the easier it is to take and just the higher quality the feedback will be.
And I think building on this idea that the feedback giving is a two-way conversation brings us back to the point of the book, which is so much depends on the feedback receiver. So we were joking, the first thing principals should do is read the book. Really what principals should do is buy the book for their teachers or run some professional development to introduce the ideas from the book to the teachers so teachers can begin to understand what gets in the way of helping them learn from feedback. I created a short cheat sheet for teachers so they could have sort of a 1-2 page at a glance of some of the ideas from the book so that teachers can really talk about and discover, you know, what is it that makes it difficult for me to learn from my principal or my department chair or whoever is giving the feedback. And we need to help put teachers back in the driver's seat in driving their own learning and understanding what makes feedback difficult for them and how can they seek out and use the feedback better.
And I think even starting with maybe examples that are a little further away from people's livelihood. You know, my wife continues to give me feedback about how to load the dishwasher and it is completely ineffective. So
let's hear more about that. Why is it ineffective?
because it hasn't worked. I still keep doing it the way I do it.
And why is that? Because is there something to the way you're doing it that works from your point of view, or are you not open to hearing a different way of doing it?
I think it's more about not willing to invest the thought in arranging it in a way that my wife claims makes the dishes get cleaner.
Interesting. I would like to come over to your house and help you and your wife have this conversation because I think there's some room for growth on both ends.
I would like to add a thank you to Doug because after reading the book, it did help with my relationship with my teenage daughter, particularly the concept of no longer switch tracking, that my daughter makes a certain comment, I respond to it, and she says, "Mom, you're always that way." And I realize she's changing the conversation from my feedback to making a comment about me. So the most helpful thing I've learned to do is to separate and say, okay, let's talk about the content of what I said, and then we can talk about how I am as a person separate from that.
Nice. That's the perfect, exactly what you're supposed to do, yeah.
Owe you a thank you.
Oh, I love that one. I have a soon-to-be 14-year-old daughter, too, and it does quickly become about the parents' problems, huh?
I should say it's going in the other direction, too, where the child says, you know, why are you so strict with me when, not letting me go to this party? And then we respond by saying, well, you should just be happy you have a parent who loves you, which is just a totally different topic, right?
Yeah.
So we're not responding at all to their comment that they feel that we're being too strict, which is a really important topic to talk about, and there's lots there to talk about. We're just changing the topic by saying, well, at least you have a parent who loves you. But it doesn't feel like we're changing the topic, which is why everyone is always doing that.
So I want to be sensitive to your time, both of you, because I'm so appreciative of you taking the time to have this conversation. And this podcast really is about trying to give people practical tips and advice, which I think we've done a great job of today. But I wanted to ask you too, you know, as two very successful people who are certainly busy in many different aspects of your lives, do you have any personal productivity strategies or hacks that you found effective that you think might help other people?
I'll share one. I'll share one about feedback, which is that, and we talk about this in the book, but it's just something that I have found very helpful for myself, which is when I get feedback, I tend to be doing what we call wrong spotting. In other words, as I'm hearing the feedback from somebody, I'm filtering it through the question of, what are all the things that are wrong with this feedback? You know, it's based on something I did a year ago, which is too long ago, or I didn't like the words that you used, or I didn't like the tone of voice wasn't quite right, or you got this little fact wrong. And I have a whole list of the things that are wrong with the feedback in my head. And then any of those give me a good reason to ignore the feedback, right? It's like, well, the feedback's wrong, so I don't need to worry about this feedback. But the fact that I can sort of parse out and notice some aspects of it that are wrong or that I don't like or that don't quite apply doesn't mean there isn't something in the feedback that is right or that would be somehow useful to me. And so it's not that I don't do this sort of knee-jerk wrong spotting anymore, because I just sort of do that. But I actually sort of proactively go out of my way to ask myself, okay, well, wait a second. What makes sense in this feedback? Or from the other person's point of view, what are they really trying to help me with here? And if you ask yourself that question, it's very constructive in terms of being able to pull out some things that are useful. You know, it might be useful from the other person's point of view, but ultimately, this feedback will be helpful to me.
Jen?
Yeah, I think that's great to look for what's right. It's just a much more positive, happy way to live at any rate. Thinking specifically about feedback in terms of, you know, what works, I think a key part of feedback has to be the reflection that you do as the feedback receiver. There has to be some component of reflection. So every morning before I jump into my to-do list, I try to write just one sentence. I keep a one-sentence journal with my thoughts or reflections, and often it's open-ended, but sometimes something happens the day before and I have a specific topic for myself. So I think, you know, using that reflective time to think about how my daughter responded to my comment, how a colleague responded, thinking about the feedback that I received. I think in general, it's good to carve out time for reflection, but particularly when you receive feedback, if you can't be so noble as to think of the good in the feedback immediately, as Doug suggests, perhaps scheduling a time later in the day or the next day to reflect on that feedback will allow you to act better on it than responding in the moment.
Excellent. Now, one last sort of content type question before we get into where people can go to learn more about each of you and your work. Just curious, how, beyond devouring every issue of The Main Idea, how do each of you stay current in your respective fields? Do you have any go-to journals, blogs, podcasts, books? How do you stay current?
Well, so for myself, I don't know that I stay exactly current. I read what I think of as the best books on these subjects that come along as they come along, and I read, you know, way too many of them. But the other thing I do is I talk to the people that I consult with, whether it's people in schools or business or government or communities. And so I'm constantly sort of getting underneath the books and into the real people and just asking them, you know, what's going on? What are the things that are challenging from your point of view? What are the things that someone like me might not be picking up on? And that's been enormously helpful.
Excellent. Jen, what about you?
I'm reading books all the time. Publishers send me their books, so I have lots and lots of books to read. But actually, it's my subscribers who often take the time to write to me and say, you really should read this. It's good. It was one of my subscribers who recommended I read Thanks for the Feedback, and that's how I ended up choosing it. And then I think in general, it's good to stay up to date, not just in your field, but in general. My dad was a pediatrician, and he said he thought some of the best pediatricians were the English majors and people who are just generally well-read. So just try to read the New York Times, the New Yorker, I read the young adult fiction that my daughter brings home. Try to be more general and well-rounded. As Doug Stone did so effectively, he always weaves in examples from every field into his book, and I think he probably understands feedback better than any of us because he brings in so many different disciplines and areas of life.
Well, both of you, thank you so much again for taking the time to have this conversation on the podcast. And where can people go to learn more about you and your work? We'll start with you, Jen.
My website is themainidea.net. And my email is there if you want to send me an email. If you want the cheat sheet for thanks for the feedback, I'm happy to send it to you so you can introduce it to your teachers. And that's the best way to contact me.
Great. Doug, how about you?
And my website is through an organization called Triad Consulting Group, which is my consulting organization. And the site is just triadconsultinggroup.com. But also, you know, you can find me by name and by these various books and so forth.
Great. Well, thank you both very much. I appreciate you taking the time today, and I know it will be helpful to both aspiring and practicing school leaders.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, and it was my pleasure as well. And I have to say, I learned a lot from both of you just from talking with you and listening to you. So this was a great pleasure for me.
This was fabulous. Thank you so much.
Fantastic.
Thanks for listening to the School Leadership Show, a podcast for aspiring and practicing school leaders. Send your comments, questions, and show ideas to mike@schoolleadershipshow.com. And please consider rating the podcast in iTunes and leaving a comment, and pass the show along to your colleagues.